Thank you, Cynthia and Soyinka. For 2 months, I've been wearing my Black Lives Matter button all over Concord. I've worn it on the street. I've worn it in restaurants. I've worn it in shops. I wore it to a contra dance. I even wore it in the hardware store. I've been wearing my Black Lives Matter button all over Concord. And guess what happened? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Zilch. Nada. Bupkis. Nothing happened. Not one single person whom I do not already know said one single thing about my Black Lives Matter button. Not one. It almost became a game to see if, before I was going to give this sermon, someone would break the record. Most Concordians saw my button, read it, and they then gave me that, oh boy, look, and kept their distance. Some people looked pained, as if I was trying to force them to comment or to interact with me. But what did I expect? By wearing my Black Lives Matter button all over Concord, would I have perfect strangers smile and give me a big thumbs up? Would they admire me and whisper conspiratorially that they cared about black lives too? Would people who disagreed with me mutter under their breath that those people deserve what they get? Would others try to convince me that all lives matter, not just black lives? Would anybody get mad enough about my button to tell me off? Would somebody throw a punch? Would anybody do anything? Apparently not. I've been wearing my Black Lives Matter button all over Concord. And absolutely nothing happened. But something did happen. It happened inside me. I was keenly aware that I was wearing a button that made other people uncomfortable. Heck, the button made me uncomfortable. I was keenly aware that I was a white man wearing a button that told the world that I sided with people of color, and not just any people of color at this particular moment, but that I sided with black people, that I stood with African Americans, and knowing that for our country's entire history, black lives have not mattered, I wanted in some tiny way to change that. By wearing my Black Lives Matter button, I put myself at the tiniest bit of risk. I took on the tiniest risk that somebody might treat me badly, the tiniest risk that I might be judged harshly, the tiniest risk that I might be discriminated against because of my button. And I say the tiniest risk because I walk the streets of Concord ordinarily without a single thought of how my presence might make someone else uncomfortable. It was only by marking myself as an ally to black people that people would notice me at all. What happened when I wore my Black Lives Matter button all over Concord is that I became even more aware of how my own white privilege and my own white male power affects things. I get to choose where to wear the button and when. I can go on passing whenever I like. We just know that our nation is currently in the throes of the latest cycle of civil rights for black people. Jim Crow followed abolition just as the mass incarceration of black men followed the civil rights era. Black people sold into slavery in Africa became white people's property, and little has changed since. Outright ownership of enslaved blacks was replaced by indentured servitude of these very same people. The small gains made by people moving north to work in factories in the 20th century were taken back by segregation, redlining, and the Ku Klux Klan. Yes, middle-class black America emerged along with tremendous strides in music, the arts, sports, and literature, and these gains continue. They are real. But so does the poverty. So does the incarceration, the police killings, the shortened lives of young black people. We know that the Black Lives Matter campaign is simply the latest in a long series asking for better treatment for African Americans. But when a campaign fails to get traction with white people, it tends to end pretty quickly. Maybe this is what those in power hope will happen all along. People like me will wear our Black Lives Matter buttons for a while until we get tired of them and until we get tired of being ignored by all the other white folks. Maybe those in power are just hoping for a better distraction so our attention turns elsewhere. A new war, a ridiculously long election cycle, a migrant crisis far away. Really, anything will do. Pope Francis surprised people during his visit to the United States recently. He surprised them not for his stance on many things, but for not needing to be politically correct. Nothing Pope Francis said or did deviated from Catholic teaching. The Catholic Church still opposes same-sex marriage. It still does not want women in leadership in the church. It denies women's right to choose to have a child or not, and the Catholic Church does not believe in universal salvation. And whether he believes in these things or not, Pope Francis still leads the Catholic Church. He works for God as he understands God. So when the Pope talks about the needs of the poor, this is not a political stand, it is a religious stand. When the Pope talks about caring for the earth, this is not a political stand, it is a religious stand. When the Pope talks about capitalism being a system that puts everybody at risk, this is not a political stand, this is a religious stand. I would argue that Black Lives Matter is not a political stand either. It is a religious stand. My only question is, are we going to be the people of faith to take this religious stand or not? Time will certainly tell. When I was visiting a friend in Michigan this summer, we went to the First Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Ann Arbor for the Sunday morning church service. I can't stand not going to church in the summer. I just love it so much. That Sunday, the church's senior minister, Reverend Gail Geisenhainer, preached an impassioned sermon about Black Lives Matter. She traced white supremacist thinking in the United States back to the 18th century Scottish philosopher David Hume. She had some harsh words to say about how white of Americans have all too readily adopted his thinking through the years. I don't remember many of the specifics of the sermon, but what stuck with me was how members of that congregation had changed the conversation in Ann Arbor by wearing black Lives Matter buttons. Sometime before, the Ann Arbor Church had purchased 1,000 small black buttons that say Black Lives Matter. Church members were encouraged to take as many of these buttons as they could use. 2 or 3 to begin with, and to then start wearing them. The idea was to start 2 kinds of conversations. The first kind would be the conversation inside the wearer's head. People were encouraged to just notice when they wore their button and when they didn't. Why they wore it some places and not other places. Were there people that they were not willing to wear their button around? How did they choose? The second kinds of conversations were verbal ones. People were encouraged to have a positive answer when asked about the button. Something like, I wear this button because this is an important issue right now. Or, my button helps me remember that some people don't have it very easy in life. Something gentle, something positive, something to start a conversation. If the conversation went well and the other person was receptive, the button wearer was to give her button away to that person, knowing she could always get another one at church. Could a couple hundred Unitarian Universalists armed with little black buttons change the conversation about racial equality in Ann Arbor, Michigan? It turned out they could. It turned out that being willing to be visible as a part of the Black Lives Matter campaign could help the first Unitarian Universalist congregation of Ann Arbor become better known for standing with people of color. And the collective force of a whole congregation wearing the same button could change the conversation. In a helpful brochure that the church also published, it acknowledged, this conversation can be hard to have. Especially for white people, it said, learning more about the power of race and racism in our country and the experience of people of color, often vastly different from the experience of white people, can be painful. It's easy to look away, to turn the page, to choose a new topic. If a white church can get a conversation going in white Ann Arbor, maybe a white church can get a conversation going in white Concord. Absolutely everything I know about racism, I had to learn, usually the hard way. I was raised with all the popular lies that you were raised with, lies that said Native Americans were savages who preferred moving west, lies that said black slaves sang all day in the fields as they worked, lies that said Mexican workers and Chinese workers were paid fairly for their labors and chose to return to their countries voluntarily, lies that lifted up white people as the thinkers and politicians and military leaders that mattered, lies that credit white men in particular, with everything exceptional about the United States. There was one adopted black girl in my high school. I didn't meet anyone Jewish until college. American Indians in Montana are mostly on the reservations, and my own family trafficked in all the racial stereotypes of the day, putting down others so that our own poverty did not sting so much. Absolutely everything I know about racism, I had to learn, usually the hard way. But I was determined to learn it, and I am determined to learn more. Now, just for a moment, I want to talk to just the white people in the room. All the people of color in the room, you can just take, you can breathe in, and you can breathe out. Because this stuff is not easy for you either, I know. Just for a moment, I'm talking to the white people in the room. The truth is, I will be racist all of my life, and so will you. I will have deep-seated prejudices I keep in check, and so will you. I will make mistake after mistake after mistake with people of color, and so will you. But I know that the work of dismantling white supremacy is some of the most important work that I will do in my life. And I hope that you will know this too, for it is our work to do. Breathe in. Breathe out. Okay, we're back to everybody. So Chris Rock is one of my favorite comedians. See, surprised you there, I know. Chris Rock is one of my favorite comedians. As a black funny man, he has seen it all. In one of his routines, Chris declares that he is living in the time in America with the nicest white people ever. The nicest white people ever. And he is right. If the black experience has been of white slave traders and white overseers and white landowners and white factory foremen, today's white people really don't seem so bad, most of them. If the black experience has been one of white lynch mobs and white Klansmen and white-only businesses and buses and toilets and beaches, today's white people really don't seem so bad. If Chris Rock can recognize the begrudging progress of white people getting nicer, then we should recognize it too, and we should build on it. Just because I will be racist all of my life doesn't mean that I get to take it easy. It means that I have to be braver and stronger and more persistent and kinder in my desire to make things better for people of color. I'm proud to be part of a religious denomination that wants to be less white supremacist too. To have the Unitarian Universalist Association stand squarely behind me as I wear my Black Lives Matter button, even if absolutely nothing happens, means a lot to me. It reminds me that my stand is a religious one. It reminds me that this great religion of ours has stood for good causes before. It reminds me that I am not alone, and neither are you. Together, we can make a difference. Together, we can start a conversation. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. So be it. Amen.